Ken, here he is right now. In person is Gene Loving. Gene?
Hello, Roger.
Just like the old days, right?
Right.
Let me kind of toss a few things at you now. And well, let's first of all have a recap of your start in radio, all your way up through the days of WGH and on into what you're doing right now as far as Channel 33, which hasn't even arrived quite as yet. Give me a start way back in the very, very early days.
Well, the earliest experience that I had in radio goes back 20 years to 1958 in a small station in Richmond, Virginia called WLLY. We used to call it Willie Radio.
Willie, I remember that one, yeah.
And some of the people that later ended up at WGH, Howard Jernigan, who's there now as the manager of WGH-FM, Gene Creasy, who in the early 60s was the program director at WGH, was a Willie alumni. We were all there at that station starting together, and then from Willie I went to work for another small station in Richmond called WEZL. We called the station Weasel Radio.
Weasel.
Big Weasel. We had a real weasel as a mascot. It was my job to clean his cage on a regular basis.
Right.
Carlton Shreves, who was a news personality at WGH for a number of years, was at that station when I was there.
Uh-huh.
And also a gentleman who has an ad agency in Williamsburg, John Murphy, was the chief engineer at that station at that time. And the program director, my boss, was a man named Jess Dubois.
Oh, we all know Jess, yeah.
Who does the TV ads.
Right.
And from that station, I went to WLEE, doing the night show from 9 p.m. until 2 a.m. in the morning, music after hours.
That was on top of a building, wasn't it? Did you do some kind of a building?
I used
top?
To do a remote every night from what they call the Beacon Drive-In Restaurant.
Right.
And in those early days of 59, remotes were done with a long microphone. You went around and interviewed the cars and all that sort of thing. Anyway, from there, I went into the bowling promotion business.
That was the first time I met you, because you stopped by the station one night when I was playing records on the all-night show at GH, and you came in there, looked around the station, and then all of a sudden, the next day, almost, you're on the air. What happened, anyway?
Well, it's sort of an interesting story, I think. I was in the Tidewater area on behalf of this concern that had several bowling alleys in town, placing their advertising and so on. And Gene Creasy, who was the program director, then called me up and he said, Gene, can you come over and fill in this evening? All of our personalities have to go over to the Center Theater for the Miss Teenage Tidewater pageant. And my afternoon man just quit. Bob Calvert, he got mad and he's gone to WNOR and I'm stuck. So that's because of Bob quitting. That's how I got the job at WGH. Bob later made up and came back.
Right, you know, he kissed and made up and came back, right? Several times.
Right. But it was a lot of fun, and
that
was the beginning.
Well, then you were on the air, of course, in the afternoon, did the afternoon drive show. They call it Drive Time, the 3-7 show. And then, all of a sudden, a name like Louise Harrison pops up. Now, what about Louise?
Well, that was the sort of beginning of the Beatle era, and because of our concert promotion thing, which sort of started at the same time I went to work at WGH, in those days, Keith James and I had a concert company, and later Dick Lamb and I formed AGL Productions, and we had been promised that the Beatles would appear for us in Tidewater. This is before they became popular or anybody really knew about the Beatles. We liked their records, their initial releases, and thought we should try to book them in. So to really make the story very short, we read in the trade magazines that they were going to appear in Washington and Miami. So we called up their agent and we said, hey, what about our date here in Tidewater? And the agent said, well, we discussed it. They wanted to play the nation's capital, and they have to go to Miami for the Ed Sullivan Show, and they really feel badly about having to pass up your offer. But we would like for you to come to Washington as our guest. And again, this was before anyone really realized how popular the Beatles would be. So I went to Washington. I remember Dave Cummins and I went up.
It was a snowy day.
It was a terrible snowy day. We decided we're going to make it anyway. And the thing that still lingers in my mind is the unbelievable snowstorm in Washington and the extraordinary number of people that were out in that weather around the Shoreham Hotel. There were just hundreds and probably thousands of kids in their, you know, snow suits waiting just to get a glimpse of the Beatles outside of the Shoreham. And the Beatles, if I remember, had taken like the whole fifth floor, which also was unbelievable that a recording act would book that many rooms. And I had an opportunity, along with Dave, to go up and meet them and be their guest in their car to go over to the concert. And I remember phoning a report back to WGH during the concert, and all you could hear was the screaming fans in the hall. You couldn't hear the Beatles or me or anything, and that was sort of the beginning of the era. And you mentioned Louise Harrison Caldwell. That's George Harrison's sister, and she was at the Shoreham Hotel that night, and I had an opportunity to spend some time with her. and found out that she was living in the United States. And when everyone was so interested for just the tiniest bit of information about the Beatles, I started calling her every day during the radio show.
I remember that, yeah.
And so she was doing what we call then the Beatle Reports. And in fact, the reports became so popular through our facilities at WGH, we syndicated these reports all over the country. So one day she said, you know, I haven't been to England in years, and I would like to go home and visit with my brother and mother and father and everything. Why don't you come with me? And I really couldn't believe it. By then, the Beatles were just unbelievably popular in America. And so we went to England. And we were met at the airport by the Beatles' own chauffeur and limousine. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And that very night, George Harrison came up to the hotel suite and spent some time with us. And we got some amazing interviews with him and eventually with all of the members of the group. We had an opportunity to spend that week in England and then going to Liverpool, staying at the Harrison home and so on. And coincidentally, while we were there, the Billboard magazine of England, the New Musical Express, they call it, was having their awards concert.
Mm-hmm.
And literally every English group was appearing that week at the concert. The Rolling Stones, the Dave Clark Five, all of them, Jerry and the Pacemakers. So we had a chance to meet all of them. And because of their amazing popularity, I felt that we had something that was of tremendous interest at the right time here in Tidewater over the station.
What does the word remote mean to you?
Well, I think in those days, of course, WGH was well known for the remotes. You used to do, of course, a lot of remotes in the evening from Mercury Roller Rink and Skateland, and we had the trailer, which the station, of course, still has. And I guess being in the afternoon, I used to do probably most of the remotes. Also, we had, in addition to the remote studio at Ocean View, one of my fondest memories of remotes is the facility that we had at the Top Hat, which isn't even standing any longer, but it was a prime nightclub at Virginia Beach. And
right.
Bill Deal and the Rondells used to be the band downstairs, uh-huh. and we had what we call, I think, a penthouse studio
right.
overlooking the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble, of course, was that you never really saw the ocean because the windows were always fogged over from the spray and everything.
Spray,
and so you're
right.
up there, you drive 30 miles from the station and lug all the equipment up three stories, and there you are staring at a foggy window. But it was a lot of fun. Looking back on it.
Looking back on it.
Right.
How about Disco 10? Remember that?
I certainly
do. How can
you
forget?
How
right?
can people still tell me they see me every week on Disco 10, and I say thank you very much. And that show's been off for 10 years now, but Dick Lamb and I had the great honor. I think you were program director. You were our boss at that time, mm-hmm. and I remember, I think you called me at home and said, hey, Gene, can you come in for a meeting? And when I arrived there, Dick was there, and the program director from Wavy Television, who's Van Kempford, who's now in Atlanta, was
right.
There, and I think a man named Dick Paul from Wavy
mm-hmm.
was there.
Yeah.
And at that time, they asked Dick Lamb and I if we'd like to do the Disco 10 TV show, which is essentially a local teenage dance party type show. Had a different school over each week, and we had a guest star on. The program ended up being very, very popular, and we appreciate that opportunity because for both Dick and I know whenever we talk about the old days on Disco 10, it's with fond memories because people really, I don't know, it was sort of part of their life,
right.
and it was on for about 4.5 years here.
Then about, let's see, the late 60s or so, you made a move. You decided to move into management?
Well, that was, actually, it was in the very beginning of 1970.
Oh, was it 70?
And my belief, as you're here on the FM station, was in the future of FM. And so I had an opportunity to go to WNOR-FM as the manager of that station, and that was when I left WGH after 9 long, happy years, and certainly fond memories of all of my association with WGH. And I was at WNOR-FM. For 5 years, and then had an opportunity to get into my own opportunity and deal at WQRK, and so here I am.
And OKT, right?
Right, WOKT is our AM station.
And upcoming in a few months, possibly the finalization of Channel 33?
Yes, we have another company which has nothing to do with the radio company called the Television Corporation of Virginia, in which 12 local people, and I'm one of them, have just received our license from the Federal Communications Commission to build a new independent television station for Tidewater. We're doing that right now and plan to be on probably September of next year with movies and some things that are not available on TV here right now. So that's sort of the future.
Right. Well, I enjoyed the get-together, Gene. Do you have any closing comments?
Well, I just think that, you know, with the guys that we've both been associated with through the years, it's interesting to see how a lot of them are still around town with various interests. Bob Calvert, of course, is at Fogg. We know of the success of Larry O'Brien and John Gary being big stars now in Pittsburgh, and Keith James is in management in Canada. Right. But I've never been able to figure out what happened to Dick Lamb.
Dick Lamb?
Dick Lamb.
I talked to him a couple of days or so ago. In fact, just a little bit earlier in this program, I talked to him, and he said the same thing. Whatever happened to Gene Loving?
Well, maybe we'll run into each other one day.
Maybe.
I'd like to hear about how he made out after he left the station. Okay. Just haven't heard a word about it.
Haven't heard a word. Okay. Thank you, Gene.